Skies all open wide, geese go high and over. Oh, now you're a beachcomber, fistful of samphire. See, lavender. See ya next year.
Farm Chat with Nathan and Jason.
So hello and welcome. It's the Deepdale Podcast. It's January. It's 2021. We're in lockdown again, and it's slightly deja vu, but hey, never mind. 2021 is trying to prove that it's going to be more of an interesting year than 2020 already, and we're only halfway through the first month. So, you know, Trump's tried a coup, and you know, we've had quite a lot of flooding, and you know, it's all been very exciting really already. And of course, we're now a free and independent state away from Europe, but you know, we won't get drawn into that.
Not getting drawn into that.
So I'm with Nathan. We're on Zoom as we are in lockdown. In theory, I'm on holiday, which is a bit of a weird thing. But I fancy doing the podcast anyway. So I'm going to get told off, but I'm doing it anyway. And we thought we'd have a little bit of farm chat before my interview with Rachel and David from, as you guys, some of you will know, Norfolk Brewhouse, and actually named Moongazer Ale. So how are you, man?
I'm good. I'm celebrating 1 year as estate manager at Deepdale Farm.
Yeah.
It's, that's nothing scary. Much happened. It's been
no,
really quiet.
No, very uneventful 12 months.
Really uneventful, yeah.
Apart from the fact that you can't count all the things that happened on your hands.
I don't have enough fingers or even toes, but no, it's been a bit of a busy year, but yeah, 1 year in, boom.
Wow, that's incredible. It just seems so, you're a bit of a veteran on the podcast for significantly longer than that, but you know, as a formal employee of Deepdale Farms and as the Deepdale Farms estate manager, you've made it to your first year.
I know, somehow. Anyway, here we are, yes.
Sanity still reigns?
Yeah, sanity still reigns. Look, onwards and upwards. You know, 2021 can throw what it likes at us. You know, it's all good. We're gonna get on with it.
So what's the breaking news, the big headlines for 2021 as far as Deepdale Farm?
Well, the big thing is our organic conversion continues for the farm. So we have, as a farm, we have gone into organic conversion, and that's across pretty much the entire farm, all of our fields. And what that means is that we've removed all of the artificial inputs from across the farm, all the chemicals that we've been sort of putting on previously, all the fertilizers, pesticides, fungicides, all those other bits and pieces. And instead of using fertilizers, we're doing things like sort of growing crops that will naturally boost, you know, soil nutrients. We are making use of, you know, sort of beneficial predatory insects, and making use of nature basically to sort of provide these things that we need on the farm. And we have a certification body that we're going with, and they basically keep us honest. They make sure that we are doing things that we need to do so that they can call us organic. And they have confirmed, they've given us a certificate that says that we are in conversion organic. And basically what that means is that right about 2 years from now, just less than 2 years from now, actually, we will be fully, formally, officially organic. Now, we're already sort of basically farming to those standards, but it takes a couple of years, basically. It's like sort of washing an old way of doing things out of your hair, as it were. But that means that the process has started. So the ball is absolutely rolling on that. And it's really exciting. It's really sort of really good stuff. And we'll continue this year. We've already got some organic crops in the ground, put in winter wheat, which was brilliant to get done. But we have more crops going in the ground this year. And very shortly, we're going to be sticking in some spring beans and some spring barley.
So we've got our organic certificate to say that we're in transition. That means we've got the 2 years till we can kind of actually start selling organic produce. And we have to sort of tick boxes while we go along that way and make sure that we don't have any of sort of dodgy sprays and all the sort of additives and sides, as they like to call them.
Yeah.
We've got winter wheat in the ground. We've got, yes, what, sort of 10, 15 hectares of winter wheat in the ground?
We've got 10 hectares of winter wheat, and yep, we are shortly going to have 20 hectares of spring barley. And we've also then have 20 hectares of spring beans. And so we're farming in these plots. Regular listeners will know this. We're farming in 100 hectares across the farm in 20 plots. So we've got 10 hectares of wheat, 20 hectares of barley, 20 hectares of beans, and those other plots that we have, the remainder of the other 50 hectares that we've got, are going to be going into clover lays for fertility building, or they're going into sort of cover crops. And those will basically be because a lot of the soils that we have across the farm are sort of quite tired, and there's not very much life in them. So we're putting in lots and lots of cover crops and lots of fertility building lays. And those will be going in for at least this year. In the case of some fields, those are going to be going in for 2 years. And they will contain lots of things like clover that will fix nitrogen in the soil. And so we're sort of using half the farm at the moment to grow crops for this year, and the other half of the farm is kind of having a bit of a rest and a bit of a recharge and a bit of TLC. So it's a real mix. And then, you know, on top of all that, around all of these crops, we have then got masses and masses of flowers and wild birdseed mixes going in for wildlife, because most of the farm is basically being managed for wildlife. So we've got loads and loads and loads of seed to stick in the ground, and that will give us masses and masses of flowers and food source for birds when they get hungry at exactly this time of year.
Excellent, excellent. And the one of the things that I'm quite excited about is the fact that things feels like our marshes, where we have had them effectively and sort of set aside for the last kind of year or two, not necessarily 100% out of choice, but because of timings and weather and everything else. The thing I'm quite excited about those is that we're going to be looking at those and then working out what we can add to that mix, so that we don't have to plow it up and start from scratch again. We can actually use the stuff that's establishing on those fields now, which will be really, that'll be really exciting, because we're kind of actually, it feels like we're using the seed bank that's sort of sitting in the soil already.
Yeah, so those three fields were left fallow. So I mean, the original meaning of the term fallow is essentially to sort of cultivate the ground and then leave it, you know, to sort of break the soil. And the fields that we had on the marsh were left fallow, and because we were not able to drill winter wheat onto them at the end of the year before last, they've been left to sort of just grow, left to their own devices this year. We weren't able to get on and do anything with them, so we just left them to it. And also, with them being on the marsh, we have birds nesting in those fields. So we have things like oyster catchers, avocets, curlews, lapwing. We've got some really interesting birds that want to use those fields actually as habitat. They want to use them as sort of nesting sites. So what we've seen is that those fields have come up with all sorts of goodies. And as those fields, like the rest of the farm now, are in organic conversion, we don't actually have the option to spray them all with glyphosate and kill everything off. And we don't actually want to do that. So they are full of seeds. There's all sorts of goodies in there. And what we'll try and do is we'll try and find a way that we can sort of, if we can add something to them so that they are going to provide more resources for pollinators and a winter food source for birds, that will make them much more valuable to wildlife. And the other benefit to them, actually, to us putting in a bit extra, is that potentially what we can also do is we can actually deal with some of the problematic species that might be dominating those fields. So for example, there's lots and lots of blackgrass growing in those fields, which traditionally, if we were farming them, would be a weed that would be competing with wheat and other crops that we put in there. And if we can make sure that those fields have got good healthy growth of a nice range of different species, then hopefully what that's also actually doing is preventing one single species like blackgrass from actually proliferating and taking over.
Sorry, that was my dog finally woke up. You know, she's been asleep under my desk. She can hear your voice. She's very excited about it. She thinks she's going to get love, but it's a hard life. This is a hard life. And so you were down on the marshes today, weren't you, with the Norfolk Rivers IDB?
Yeah, so the Norfolk Rivers IDB, the Internal Drainage Board, are a team of people that we've been working with for a little while now. They've helped us to do some really good flood mitigation work on the farm,
which has been quite useful.
Yeah, now they're specialists that basically, you know, it is their job to keep water moving and to have water moving in the right places and prevent it from going in the wrong places. And we have drainage channels that go around our marsh fields. And what they've done this morning is they've come out and taken a look, but with they have an ecologist on their team. And part of the reason that they've come out to take a look is so that we can suss out the work that they want to be, that they need to be doing, which they're going to start basically next week. And the other thing is that bringing the ecologist out, what we can make sure of is that if we have any sort of species of animals or plants that we need to be really paying attention to and sort of making taking steps to protect, then we can be doing that. So for example, in the channels around our marsh, around the drainage channels, we have lots of little little burrows in those channels. Now, we can't necessarily see, it's quite difficult to see at this time of year, but we have to work on the assumption that those burrows might be occupied by water voles. And water voles are pretty much one of our most threatened small mammals in the UK. They are sort of verging on extinction. They're predated by lots of different species. So if we have them on the marsh, we absolutely have to take care of them. And the guys will be taking diggers in and basically sort of deepening the drainage channels by digging out silt that's accumulated in them. But when they do that, they'll be very, very careful to go to the middle of the channel and avoid all the burrows in the sides so that they're not disturbing anything that might be living in the sides of the channels. And it's really brilliant that we can be working with these guys because, you know, this is bread and butter to them. This is standard. This is the kind of work that they do every day. And they're factoring in, making sure that they're paying attention to any considerations around the local flora and fauna, which is exactly what we want to be doing.
It is a pleasure working with those guys from Norfolk Rivers IDB. I feel in safe hands. You know, they've helped us in some very stressful situations when we had all the flooding in this time last year. And the work that they've done in particularly in Burn and Brisk has been hugely positive, and it's completely changed that field beyond all recognition. We still get an awful lot of water, but it's in the right places and it's dealt with nicely, and they've, you know, created us ponds and they've edited stuff, and we're looking forward to doing quite a lot more work with them over the next 2 or 3 years as part of our stewardship scheme, create more ponds and stuff. So that's going to be good. The dikes are in need of some loving care and attention. The reeds have taken over in places, and those dikes are important to keep that.
They are, and one of the things they're doing is this: they are removing reeds from, because reeds will basically, if you have them in a water channel, they will spread out, and because the reeds basically, because the stalks and the roots, they will cause silt to settle. What you actually will have is that the bank of a river where there are reeds, that bank will actually accrete out, that will actually build out, and the reeds will eventually create new solid ground, and they will actually clog a channel of a river up. And we actually have reeds in our in the drainage channels going around our marsh, and this is what's happening in a couple of different areas, because what reeds do is they have these suckers, these rhizomes that basically spread underneath the mud. They will spread out sideways, and then they'll send shoots up in new locations. So the Norfolk Rivers guys will be scraping out the reeds and clearing the channels, but we know that we still have, the reeds will be suckering out from the banks. But actually, I speak from experience, it's a lovely job for volunteers to do when we manage to get our hedge collective and get conservation volunteers back onto the farm, to put on a pair of chest waders and dive into a channel and pull the suckers out from reeds. I guarantee you it's a very satisfying job. So I'm going to look forward to having a bunch of people on the farm to do that at some point in the future.
That's cool. Excellent. Excellent. And I think the other headline you wanted to, you know, flag up was trees, wasn't it? You know, because we've suddenly had a delivery of trees.
Yeah. So the lovely people at TCV have basically sent us 950 trees. So it's a mixture of all sorts of lovely trees, from oaks to hawthorns to dog roses. It's a mixture of different tree and hedge species. And TCV, the conservation volunteers, Normally, you know, it would have been lovely if we could welcome some TCV volunteers or our own Hedge Collective volunteers onto the farm. Just unfortunate that we've had these trees delivered in the middle of a national lockdown. So we're going to get on and start to put these trees in the ground. And that we'll be doing that with our team. And we'll be doing that as safely as we can. But yeah, it means that we have loads of lovely new trees going onto the farm, great value for biodiversity, and also in terms of where they're going, great value for sort of holding the soil together and for improving drainage. So, you know, give it a few years and hopefully we'll have a lovely little sort of new patch of woodland on the farm.
Yeah, that's exciting. Yeah, and it will have a pond very close to it. So hopefully it'll be a wonderful haven of nature, and that, you know, another opportunity for nature to really get a hold on Deepdale Farm would be great.
Indeed.
Yeah, really great. Well, man, it must be very quiet there again, with no customers around on the campsite and stuff. It must be very, very, well, it's a peaceful, really.
It's relatively peaceful, apart from all the lorries coming onto the farm at the moment to harvest carrots.
Yeah. So I'm not disappointed they're doing that while there isn't any motorhomers, to be honest.
I'm not disappointed that they are doing it while there are no motorhome owners, but it does leave us with and it basically means that we have these fields having been harvested. When you harvest a root crop, that involves turning over a lot of soil. So it leaves us with some bare fields, which is not ideal for us at this time of year when we have lots of rainfall. But we'll be basically able to get onto those fields as quickly as we can and stick on some lovely clover lays and some pollinator mixes. And so, yeah, lots and lots of carrots exiting the farm in the next couple of days, and some fairly big lorries doing that because this is the interesting thing. Lockdown notwithstanding, people apparently still want to eat carrots.
Yep. They are a British product, and it is certainly sort of sad not to produce them anymore, but I'm not going to miss the damage to the fields. So, you know, it swings and roundabouts, really. They are a fairly major impact on where they grow them. So it's going to be interesting.
And we're not saying we're not going to grow carrots again ever, but they're a crop that we will have to think quite carefully about how we were to grow that in the future, and we would have to be growing it organically. So it's an interesting thing for us to sort of, you know, consider for the future. But for the time being, we're going into a really lovely crop rotation, which is sort of much more sustainable and focused on soil health. So we'll focus on that for the time being.
And it was really interesting because I'm on the board of the Norfolk Rivers IDB, and they were asking for case studies from the flooding work. And of course, the work that we paid the IDB to carry out in terms of the flood mitigation, it was great being able to explain to them the difference that made, but also the plans that we had for, constantly keeping our soil covered, constantly having crop in there, so that it has much less chance of erosion before it gets to the flood defences that the Norfolk Rivers IDB have built. So it's that knock-on impact of making sure that you reduce the impact all the way down the chain, and that will make a huge difference. Indeed. Well, man, lovely to speak to you. I hope that it's an uneventful couple of weeks while I'm away, and that the roofers get on well with the barns, and that's going well. And and that you have fun preparing to put in those spring crops. Keep well.
Totally. You too. Take care.
Thanks for chatting to me, man. Talk to you soon. Well, I'm here on Zoom. We're in lockdown, so it's not possible to be face-to-face, sadly, with our lovely friends, Rachel and David from Moongazer Ale. Many of you will know them as the Norfolk Brewhouse, and you will have seen them at many of our events, like the festival and the Hugo, where you'll see Rachel's smiling face serving you lovely served beers, and David's less smiley face as he lumps cases and cases of beer and barrels across the courtyard to fill up the bar while you guys drink it dry. Welcome, guys. It's lovely to have you on the Deepdale podcast. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
Hello.
And I just wanted to, I thought it would be really nice to chat because so many of our customers know your product. You know, they know your beers and your lagers, and they know you guys because they've seen you at the events. But I don't think any of us have really kind of thought about kind of what inspired you to set up the brewery, what you were doing before this, what, you know, how did you come into brewing and all that sort of stuff. And also, like, I love the moon gazer and the hares and, you know, all that sort of stuff. It'd just be lovely to know a bit more about the story. So you know, let's start at the beginning. So what brought you to a brewery?
I think Rachel will always say it was my midlife crisis, really. But my background, Rachel's background has been in sort of PR and communications with City Hall. My personal background was working a lot for the pub trade. So I've spent most of my life marketing in the pub trade.
Selling other people's alcoholic products?
Yeah, helping pubs and pubs chains market themselves and brewers market themselves. So I'd kind of be driving around the country doing 50,000 miles a year and getting highly stressed and seeing all these people that seem to be having a lot better fun in life than I was. Little did I know that they were just very good actors, but doing it. But no, it's all good fun. And then the Turvers have shared a passion for beer, you know, since we've met, and we kind of brought the two together really, just to try and say, what can we do that starts creating something? So rather than us both having sort of pretty much desk bound jobs and pen pushing jobs, I know it's a cliche, but what could we start to do that could make things and bring pleasure to people, but be something that we're very passionate about? So beer seemed to be the obvious answer. So we kind of made that decision around 2008, 2009, and came up with the Moongazer thing. But then it took us 3 years to pull it all together, to work out the plan, to save up the money, and to sort of launch Moongazer in February 2012,
we started. So. Yeah. Yeah.
And so were you always in the brewery that you're in now, or did you sort of start in your garage?
Yeah, we were based in a barn in a little village called Hindringham in North Norfolk, not that far from Deepdale, about 20 minutes on the coast road up there, 15, 20 minutes, but a bit quicker if you're a crow. But yeah, we sort of been in there, and we sort of envisaged, we remember standing in there when we sort of extended it and refitted it to brew, that thought, well, how are we ever going to fill this? Because it seemed pretty cavernous at the time. But we've managed to fill it and some. And kind of, if anyone knows of any other barns out there at the moment, it would be nice to sort of move on to the next level, really.
I'm sure you've got a spare room at home you can fill with, you know, sort of another.
That's the garage.
Yeah, that's the garage.
And it's already full.
Excellent. And you started at the Norfolk Brew House, and you've changed reasonably recently to Moongazer. And Moongazer came from the hares that you had on your bottles, which would kind of run through the theme. So what? Tell us about the different names you use for the beers.
Should I start with? Yeah, so that's right at the beginning. I love it. We used to do lots and lots of walking with Brewery Dog Max, of which many of you have met Brewery Dog Max as well at the events. And lots of brown hares, wild brown hares, we'd see on the fields around Norfolk, and just loved them. So when the idea came for the brewery, we wanted names. And the very first name we started with was Stubble Stag, which is actually the Norfolk name for a hare. And if you can imagine a brown hare sitting in a stubble field with his ears stuck up, so hence Stubble Stag. So that was the very first name. And when we worked on the design, using the word Stubble Stag with our graphic designer, it became the use of the hare became more part of it, because Stubble Stag wasn't working as an image. So the designer came up with the hare of the moon gazing image, which we really liked. But we managed to keep hold of Stubble Stag, which was kept as the name for one of our lagers, which some of you may drunk. And there on after, it grew with Stubble Stag. And the next one, I think, was Dew Hopper.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is a West Country name for a hare. And then I'll let David explain. We got completely carried away and we've now got Jigfoot, Jumper, Nibbler, Bouchard, Triskele, and lots of other hare names. And I'll let David explain the story behind these ones.
The family of the hares and the names that we're all now using come from an old Middle English poem called Names of the Hare. And the poem is actually reputed to be an old hunter's poem. So I think there are 77 sort of local names for a hare. And the idea was if the hunter could say the name of the hare would surrender to him. So you imagine a hunter in a field with his bow and arrow trying to remember 77 names and reciting this poem. So it was the Jigfoot, the Scoundrel, the Nibbler, and the idea that the hare would probably run away by the time he'd finished the poem. But within this poem, and it is a nice tale, there are just some little gems of names which, like I say, have just lended themselves nicely to our beers, and you know, people seem to have really warmed to it. So much so that we kind of ended up evolving our brewery name away from the Norfolk Brewhouse to Moongazer, because you know, people would phone up the brewery and ask, you know, we'd answer it Norfolk Brewhouse and they'd be going, oh sorry, I wanted Moongazer, and it's like, you have got Moongazer.
or people would ask for, oh, can I have a pint of Moongazer please, and that's like, yeah, which one?
Yes, yeah.
It started off with Moongazer Golden, Amber and Ruby, so therefore we gave them names, so people now say, oh, I'll have a pint of Jigfoot, Jumper or Nibbler. Same beers, different names, but yeah, it was just confusing that people just used to ask for a pint of Moongazer.
Yeah, no, so they're now getting an identity of their own, and it's really quite interesting actually, because the Nibbler, for example, that's a beer that was originally called Moongazer Ruby, and its sales doubled as soon as we called it Nibbler. And all the pubs were going, oh, what have you done to the beer? What have you changed it? We said, we've done nothing to the beer. It's the same recipe. It's the same brew as it always has been. It's literally just the name Nibbler. So it just seemed kind of has a friendliness to it and stuff. So, yeah, no, we like it and we're kind of developing it now. And if people check out our website, we're beginning to write little short stories about each of the names and the beers and develop characters. That's just my other passion is kind of writing and fiddling about with stuff like that. So it's kind of, who knows where it's going to take us. We might be the Norfolk equivalent of Watership Down one day. You never know. But we keep playing with it. But no, it's a love of hares. And yeah, that's the kind of Moongazer thing has been something which has worked well for it. And I always think, and we always say to Rachel, because we were passionate about the names, it, you know, it's not just about the beer, you're passionate about the brands and what you do with it. So kind of all works. And I think people buy into that as well. They just see that we care about it.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And it's, I quite like your beers. And it's, they're a real asset to the events that we run, which is good. And I love the range that you do as well, because you've got something for, you know, everybody. I prefer what was Goldfoot, Golden, and now is Jigfoot. Is that right? Have I got the right
word? Right.
Yeah. It's been a while since I've run a bar with your beers. So I'm trying to, the names have slipped a bit, but and I love the fact that you do the darker ales and the mid-range ales as well, and you also do your specials. So what was the, because there was a very special one last winter, wasn't it? It was quite a dark syrupy sort of ale.
Triskele or Hiberno?
We did Hiberno.
Oh, it could have been Hiberno, I think. Possibly.
Hiberno we brewed as well with Nelson and Norfolk Tea, from the Christmas markets, he's up there. And he supplies us with lots of fruit tea for Hiberno. Okay. That was an amber beer, 4.5, brewed with some fruit tea. So that is a lovely beer. There's another one we've got that's dark and winter, was Triskele, which is the porter. 4.5% with a smoked wheat. So I don't know if you can remember having that one, but that's got quite a smoky bacon flavour, is how I describe
it. Sounds pretty good. So on a normal week, what would you be brewing? Would you be brewing sort of the, as I remember them, Golden, Amber and I can't remember what the third
Nibbler.
One was. Nibbler. So what would you normally be brewing, you know, in a normal week, except when you're doing your specials?
Well, we usually, like I say, in a normal world, we would be brewing at least sort of five times a week. We've got Jigfoot, which is our kind of staple golden beer, like you say, which would tend to be most weeks we'd be brewing that. And then we do another one, which is called Pintail, which is also golden beer, but slightly different hops. That uses New Zealand hops, but that's actually one of our gluten-free beers because we've sort of moved into that over the last couple of years. And that's been very successful for us. And then we'd mix and match with like the jumpers and the nibblers, which would tend to be once every couple of weeks. And then, like you say, we always do the specials. So when we first went into this, we said we were going to do three ales and two lagers, and that's it. If people want something else, they'll just have to go somewhere else. But people do want something else all the time. But it's also, we found it's nice to do, and it's nice to do the specials, and it keeps your interest. And as Rachel touched on, we do quite a lot of collaborations, either with other Norfolk suppliers or other brewers, where we kind of pool our resources and put our heads together and come up with something between us. And that's quite nice. And it sort of exposes Norfolk to other people and things. You know, we've had for Norfolk Day 2 years ago, we brought a brewer over from Norfolk in Virginia, USA. We just rung him up and said, hello, we're from Norfolk, come and brew a beer. And he was like, okay, I'll get on the plane and I'll bring the family. And we had a load of Vikings over from France to do collaboration beer. So it kind of, you know, we worked out very quickly in the brewing that we weren't going to get very rich from this, so we might as well enjoy doing what we're doing. So you find your mind and your market takes you to different places, whereas sometimes normally you'd close it off and go, well, that's not very commercial. But we think, you know what, I want to do that, so let's do it. So and that's the beauty of being small, really, and adaptable.
Yeah. So, we had another recent collaboration, didn't we, with Braised Cottage Pork Pies. Mm-hmm. She came to us wanting some of our beer to put in her pork pies. So she did a festive beer with them. Was that Triskel? That was Triskel. Yeah. And that went really well. So, and that's just fun. It just makes it different. And again, working together with other local suppliers, because Norfolk is important to us. As you can tell from my voice, I'm very local.
And watch this space, because one of the things we've been doing with lockdown, we keep coming in and out of lockdown, so we keep brewing beer thinking, are we going to sell it or are we not going to sell it? But in between all of those things, we've got quite a few bit of beer left over that we've actually been distilling with a local distiller. Mm-hmm. So hopefully there'll be a sort of Moongazer spirit coming out as we emerge from lockdown. There'll be something special to celebrate with as well.
That's fantastic. That's going to be really exciting. Yeah, that's good. I love the fact that you've at the bars, you've tried to, you know, sort of gather together other suppliers. So whether it's local cider, local gin, whatever it happens to be, you know, sort of bringing all those together so that there's that sense that you're not just buying, you know, you're not just going to the bar, but you're buying stuff that's local. Because you go to other places and they're just selling whatever was the best deal that they could get for that event. And that, and I've always enjoyed, as you know, we've all enjoyed working with you guys because you're local, and you know, it's that sense of kind of camaraderie of the local area. And I love the fact that you throw yourselves into our events and come and stay and, you know, get involved and stuff. And so I love that cooperative feel of having all of those interconnecting things. And I like the fact that we all introduce each other to other people and say, oh, you know, have you thought about talking to them, and you know, stuff like that. I think that's, for me, that's what makes the difference between you know, just normal day-to-day business and actually creating that kind of team and group that can kind of develop and grow for stuff. I think it's fantastic. It really is. It's very enjoyable working with you guys. And I know it's been an interesting 12 months, but I have loved your sense of humour, particularly the social distancing safety video. It reminded me remarkably of the health and safety video on the Minions movie, with you two walking around with your large cardboard distance unit. And I love the fact that it keeps reappearing on social media posting it. It's fantastic.
We keep getting requests for it. We got to think of social distancing too, is what we need to come up with now.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you should do your guide to social distancing from the Yeah, I think it's fantastic. It really is. Yeah. And, you know, well done for keeping a sense of humour over the last 12 months. And I really hope that it's not long before we're welcoming you to Deep Dell again with both your beard and your smiles.
We've really missed it. Really missed it. That's such a fun part of our year, actually, getting the bar out and just meeting lots of our customers and helping you. Yeah, now I do just those kind of things. Yeah, really, really missing that. Yeah.
So importantly, you know, how do people get your beer if during these very odd times? What's the best way for them to access their beer and, you know, they can recreate the fabulous bar that you guys do at home? Where's the best place?
The best way is if they go to moongazerale.co.uk. All the routes, you can buy it directly online there, and then like I say, there's all other options for depending on where people live as how we can get beer to you. So yeah, visit the website. You can buy the beer, read some news, read about the names of the hares, and support us wherever you can. But we look forward to seeing you all again soon.
And is that moongazerale.co.uk?
That's it. Yeah. Right. We're on Facebook and Twitter, so you can contact us there as well. And even if you don't want to buy the beer, just contact us and say hi, you're missing us too.
Well, it's really lovely to speak to you both, and I hope it is not long before we're able to have bars, have hugs, and enjoy your beer. So
absolutely,
keep well, lovely people, and we'll talk soon.
Cheers. Brilliant. Jason,
thanks. Cheers.
My favourite place.
Well, hello, mate. It's lovely to see you. We don't see very much of each other right at the moment. No. Normally, we see a lot of each other, but it just feels like we haven't seen a great deal of each other in the last sort of 12 months, really.
No, very strange.
Lots of telephone calls and quite a few Zoom conversations. So lovely to have you back on the podcast.
Yes,
thank you. And it's going to be great to hear about your sort of favourite place, your favourite walk around Melton Constable, where you live. So, tell me more.
Yeah. Well, great. Absolutely. Thanks. It's good to be back on the podcast. We've lived in this area now ever since we moved to work at Deepdale and come and work with you. And first in Briston, a little village and down the road, a couple of miles and tacks on to Melton Constable, where we are now. And it's taken this situation for us to get out and about around our own locality and discover just what it has to offer in terms of nature and wildlife and place, you know, the sense of place that we've been able to discover and be valuable through this period has been really wonderful, really fantastic. You know, we got out for walks from lockdown, from March onwards last year, and we've carried on with those through the different periods of lockdown, and we discovered, you know, a couple of markers around the landscape that we've continued to visit through that period and seen them change through the seasons, and we hadn't even known they were there before this lockdown started. And it's been wonderful, actually. It's been really wonderful. And if we're trying to be positive, that's where we're focusing our energies, is just how wonderful it has been finding those places on our doorstep. And I'd known that the route that we follow is there because I run that route as a circle when we lived in Briston, which is a couple of miles down the road. And I'd gone past these wonderful ponds that exist, and I'd gone past this little bit of woodland, but running, I'd never really noticed them. You know, I'd registered that they were there, but never stopped and never taken any time to look at what they represented. And it was just wonderful to head out, you know, with Sheila on our little permitted exercise as it started, and they're only about a mile and a half from where we live, and the ponds themselves are the first things we discovered, and they're just fantastic, absolutely fantastic. Just off this little trackway, farm access track, out the back of Melton Constable. And when we first discovered them back in March last year, we thought they were a single pond. And as the seasons developed and the level of water in the pond, as we thought, dropped a little, we realized, and from the little sign that was buried in the undergrowth next to the pond, it kept talking about ponds rather than pond, singular. And as the water levels dropped, these two ponds emerged. And what we're seeing again now, with all the rain we've had over the last few weeks, is that the water levels come back up, and we can see exactly why we thought it was a single pond, because it's flooded the bank that separates the two of them. And it has become again a single body of water. And it's, they're just fantastic. They're just fantastic. Nothing that you would say, look at the wildlife there, but they've got tadpoles we saw, first of all, and newts. And we'd never neither of us had ever really seen newts up close in the wild, in their own habitat, and able to go back to them day after day and stand there quietly, gazing down into some dark, fresh water, still water, and look and wait for these newts to emerge from the bottom of the pond, come up, have a little feed. Oh, there's another one, there's a couple. And then we see some frog spawn, newt spawn. And then we see these just huge numbers of tadpoles. And to just see those ponds develop and change through that period of time was magical, actually. It was really magical. And it was a massive help mentally through that period of time. After discovering that, the ponds have changed and developed through the seasons. As I said, we've seen the newts and the frogs and the dragonflies. Then the mayflies and the dragonflies that have come out were the splash of colour they gave to the sort of May and June and July period was just it was so healing for the soul. It was a bright spot to focus on through all this, to go and spend some time literally just sat in amongst the ferns, looking out over a tiny little bit of water, and having these dragonflies fluttering around us, the woodland and farmland birds that we started to learn their calls, yellowhammer, and that we picked up a little area on the way to the ponds, seen a tree creeper for the first time, actually seen a tree creeper in the woods beyond the ponds that we found. And we ended up finding this little wooden, little rotten log that had fallen on the ground just in the edge of the woods that we've used for our little mini stops, where we've taken a flask out with us, a little bit of cake or a croissant that we've picked up at the local bakery on the way through, and just spent a bit of time doing the forest bathing thing, which we picked up again over these last couple of weeks. We've taken some of our favourite poetry out with us. Last week it was Alice Oswald, who wrote absolutely fantastic Dart, poem about the River Dart, through the seasons, and through the voices of lots of people who interact with the river. But one of her collections was Woods, etc. And we've taken that one out and been reading extracts from that while we're sat in these woods. And it's just been really great, really great. And we then created a little loop of a walk from that pond and found a habitat for a little owl, and discovered this little owl, which never really seen, seen barn owls quite a bit when we drive to and from Deepdale, but seeing little owls at these barns on the way was great. And so created a little regular appointment. We'd go round every other day and see if we could see little Al and see where he was sat. And sometimes he was on the apex of the barn, sometimes he was in the little broken window, just sat peering out at us. It was really great. So yeah, it's been a wonderful thing.
Something very, very special about seeing owls in the wild. It's just, you know, really wonderful to see those birds of prey, which means that you've got a healthy habitat, which means, you know, it's all sort of things. We discovered the hedge collective that we have, which, you know, it's all the volunteers who come and do our hedge planting, which you and Sheila are very definitely part of. Well, I posted a thing on the other day, which I'd never heard before, that if you're a person who loves trees, you are a dendrophile.
Okay.
So apparently that is the word, a dendrophile. Someone who loves trees. It's a great photo of a kind of guy standing in the things. But there's something really special about standing surrounded by trees, even if it's just looking at the one tree in the landscape, or, you know, hundreds of trees. It's just something very special about it, isn't it? It's lovely.
Yeah.
And of course, that walk that you've just been talking about was where you and I kind of formulated the plan with all of our new private rooms and stuff. So
yeah, that's right.
You know, when we were both feeling quite down in the dumps about the year as a whole, and took a long, lovely walk, which was really inspirational, and just kind of got us sort of really formulating how we were going to change our offering in the hostel. And it's been lovely to have something really positive to come out of the last sort of tier four restrictions before Christmas. It was really great to be able to have something really positive out of that. So
yeah, and that, you know, they are taking shape and ready for, you know, people to come and stay when we're able to have people back to stay, which will be very nice.
Yeah, exactly, it will be. But I think people will really like what we've done with the rooms, and it's so nice to have been able to use, you know, what has been an otherwise frustrating time to really create something hugely positive at Deepdale. It's lovely, really. So
yeah, it is. I think it allows us to continue with what we've been creating there, which is this hybrid between a backpackers hostel and something else that has its own vibe and own feel about it. And you know, this realization that, you know, that the communal sleeping of dorms is going to be a very difficult thing to enjoy, certainly for the foreseeable future, and maybe that'll change it forever. And I think allowing people to have their own private rooms and their own private spaces, while still enjoying, you know, what aspects of communality we can provide at Deepdale that we've had before, is the right way for us to go at the moment.
No, it's good. Yeah. It's good. Well, thank you, man. Lovely, lovely to chat with you.
As ever.
Favorite place.
So hi, Andy. For everybody who's listening, Andy is one of our night team. Retired from the police force and is now one of our night team, kind of answering all those sort of difficult questions and helping out all those people who can't quite get their electrics to work, or needs a new gas exchange, or barbecue won't light, or anything else like that. And he's got he's going to chat to us about his favourite place on the North Norfolk coast. So, hi Andy, welcome to the Deepdale podcast.
Hello Jason, thank you for having me. It's nice to be here, and hello everybody listening.
And so where is your favourite place on the North Norfolk coast then?
Well, we're relatively new, to be honest with you, to this area. So the most that we've explored is the south part, really, of the west coast we're on here, because we are in the Snettisham area. So majority of my time when I'm out and about is the kind of Snettisham area up to Heacham, and then maybe on towards Hunstanton. But the place that I just love the best is the Snettisham area. It's got so much to offer. We dog walk a lot. We've got a two-year-old Doberman who takes a couple of hours in the morning, a couple of hours in the evening when we're allowed. So we get to one of the big attractions here is the Ken Hill Estate, which is an area that they've spent a lot of money on in relation to rewilding. So that's lovely. You know, we can walk to the Ken Hill Estate, but there's a car park down there. And from there, you can go into the woods that are all fenced off now. We'll say all fenced off. The whole of the Ken Hill Estate has got a fence around it to keep animals in as opposed to keeping people out. So there's a couple of gated entrances. Yeah, then when you're in there, you've got just vast amount of woods to walk on and then open areas, and they've done a large remarshing section. So from Ken Hill Woods, you can walk down, there's a path that takes you down to the beach area down at Snettisham, and then that takes you through the remarshing area. And then that will get you down to the beach, which is probably a half hour walk from the woods. It's they've reintroduced red pole cattle there. They've done ponies. There's quite a lot of ponies down there now. They've got pigs as well. So you get to see them from a distance, but you can kind of walk amongst them when they're there. It's, the pigs are fat, because I go there a lot. I actually do interact with the pigs quite a lot, which is quite weird. It's not often my Dobie meets something bigger than him. it's great, actually. They're so calm and placid, and they're nature's way of turning the ground over. You know, so that's all just nice to be part of that. And, yeah, then when you get down, if you walk down there onto the beach, then you've just got miles of wonderful beach just to explore. And again, from a dog walking point of view, there's a path that takes you from, there's a car park also down there, so you could drive down Beach Road to the car park. And there, if you can turn left or right when you hit the actual beach itself, left takes you off to the RSPB reserve, which is, you know, gets lots of visitors. That's got its own specific car park area and lots of huts down there for the fascinating numbers of birds, just amazing. Gets lots of visitors just for the bird walking alone. And then, yeah, you can walk the other way, takes you up to Heacham. But there's a lovely area. It's obviously just an open beach, but there's also grasslands there as well, which is good for the dog walking, and there's paths all over it. And yeah, it's lovely. And of course, one of the other best things of all of being on this west facing part of the coast is we get the sunsets. So it's just incredible sunsets every evening when it's clear. And people literally go down to the beach at Snettisham just to sit there. In the summer, you see them with their chairs out and their bottles of booze and sitting there just watching the sunset. It's lovely, actually.
Sounds great. I don't think I'm not sure I've ever been to Snettisham Beach. It's sort of one of those beaches along the coast of here that I just have never made it to. So I really must make it that way.
You know, it's a beach in the sense that it's not a sandy beach. So, you know, we don't get people down there, you know, just coming for a sandy beach as such. It's quite pebbly. And we've got that. It's very, very tidal here, just incredibly tidal. So that when the tide is out, it seems like it's a mile out. You know, it comes in very quickly, and there's lots of it here is mudflats. So it's very, very muddy and boggy, which is obviously part of the attraction for the birds and things. But once you then get round towards where the RSPB section is, there's an old jetty down there, which is lovely to see, which is still intact. And yeah, it's a very nice place to be. It's very, very quiet, actually. And I think because it's the far end of the coastal path, you know, we don't get too many people down here. And it's just been announced that they are extending the coastal path now from Snettisham, that you'll be able to carry on all the way around to King's Lynn. So that's the final extension of the coastal path.
I think they've had some interesting discussions about where they were going to run the, the coastal footpath, because it's sort of, there's so many creeks coming in and everything else, that trying to sort of work a route has been really fascinating for them for all the wrong reasons. But I think it'll be fantastic to be able to walk all the way from the quay in King's Lynn all the way round the coast of Norfolk. It'd be fantastic.
Yeah,
it's going to go all the way round to, you know, to Caister and beyond. Yeah. So that's going to be fantastic.
That is incredible, actually. Yeah, I mean, you can walk so far, and you're quite right. You then hit all the creeks coming in and things, and it just gets too difficult at that point. But I think they'll take it over to the coastal defences, because there's a coastal defence, which is quite nice also. You can walk along the coastal defences. It's a separate walk in its own right, which is quite elevated. So I think when you get round towards the... it's Wolferton there, isn't it? When you get round to Wolferton Marshes, which I think is one of Prince William's favourite hangouts, then that's where I think it'll probably have to go up onto the sea defences for a while. But yeah, it's interesting, actually. I've never met him yet, but keep my eye out for him.
Yeah, keep your eye out. You never know. You never know.
You never know. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that, Andy. That's fantastic. And keep enjoying your dog walks while we're in lockdown. And, you know, we look forward to seeing you back at Deepdale in the not-too-distant future, hopefully.
Absolutely.
Fingers crossed.
Good to talk to you.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Andy.
Take care, Jason. Bye-bye.
I'm going to throw in a book
Perfect.
Recommendation
book
just
recommendation.
At the end of our chat, which has sort
so
of,
we need a little intro music, you know, saying book introduction or something, you know.
We could. It's related to our sort of discovery and continued walks around our ponds and our place that we've discovered out the back of Mount Cunstable. And it's a book by an author called Julian Hoffman, who I hadn't read before, but it's called Irreplaceable. It is, I know that you can
see. Oh,
that's
a lovely cover.
It is a nice cover. It's called Irreplaceable, The Fight to Save Our Wild Places. And it's the most beautifully written book about nature and place, not just about wildlife, but it's about the importance of place for the maintenance of species, but also the maintenance and the sort of nurturing of us and our overall enjoyment of the world and our life as human beings, you know, alongside other species of animals. It is so beautifully written. He's got such a turn of phrase, and he really engages with these places, both in the UK and around the world. And I would highly recommend it to anyone who's interested in, who hasn't read it, in nature writing and travel almost as well. It's almost a travel book, but it's definitely a nature writing classic. It really is fantastic.
Excellent. So just remind me of that book.
Yeah, it's Julian Hoffman, and it's Irreplaceable.
Excellent. That's fantastic. Well, thank you, man. That's added a whole new segment to our podcast. We're going to have to make that a regular
reviews.
Thing now. Book reviews.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we've now got our annual review of our favorite music of the year, which, you know, we did in the December podcast, which we'll have to make as a regular thing, because that was really went down a storm with customers. And now we'll have to do our book review segment. So that's really cool. So excellent. Thank you so much for talking to me again.
That's all right. No problem at all.
And we'll talk soon.
Yeah, talk soon. Take care.
Cheers, man.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Deepdale Podcast. You can subscribe to our podcast through any good podcast sites, including Apple, Google, Castbox, where we host our podcast. Just type in Deepdale Podcast, your favourite provider, and we should be there. We'd love your feedback, so please do email us your thoughts and suggestions to podcast@deepdalefarm.co.uk. We'll be back in February with our next episode, but in the meantime, if you'd like to listen to previous episodes, you can find them on your podcast provider or head to our website, deepdalecamping.co.uk or deepdalefarm.co.uk, to see the whole back catalogue. The December 2020 episode is a must, as Chris gives us his music release recommendations for 2020. Thanks again for listening. Stay safe and well in these strange times, and hope we'll see you back at Deepdale in the not too distant future.
Skies all open wide, geese go high and over. Oh, now you're a beachcomber, fistful of sand far sea lavender. See ya next year.